Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I have Jim Carlo here. He's had an incredible career. Really looking forward to talking to you, Jim. Right now, really focusing on his authoring and writing books and helping leadership and CEOs and leaders become higher performing. But Jim, why don't you introduce yourself?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Obviously, Dean stated my name quite well, actually. So you nailed that. Some people have trouble with it. But I have had a 30 plus year career entirely in healthcare, originally on the insurance side of healthcare until about the mid 90s. And then I migrated to the technology side of healthcare. All of my roles have been in leadership, everywhere from a manager level all the way up to a president, C-suite level. And I've worked for some amazing leaders in my career, including having a stint with Ross Perot at Perot Systems. So I have gathered a lot from some of the best mentors I've had and have tried to turn that around to be able to give that back to others. And a lot of people know the mathematics of reading a financial statement, but they struggle with some of the other aspects of leadership. And that's where I fill in the blanks.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, you stated 30-year career. Like, what's one defining leadership moment from that journey that like shapes how you coach leaders today? And then especially like in this new era of AI and data.
Let's break that up into two pieces. So the first one I'll tell you started the year I graduated college, and it was a defining moment in my life. The same year I graduated college, I ran for local public office in this town I grew up in. I ran for a city council position and I won. And shortly after winning, the city administrator invited me in to speak with him. And in that discussion, he said, I have one request of you. And I didn't know what that was going to be. Here's a 22-year-old getting into politics, and his first meeting, he's not even sworn in, and somebody says, I want you to do something for me. And I didn't know what it was, but it was, I will tell you this, it was life-changing. And what he said to me was, when you go to bed at night, and as you put your head on the pillow, but before you close your eyes, I want you to ask yourself one question. And that question is, did I do anything today for my own personal self-benefit that was at the expense of another individual, group of individuals, or organization? He said, and after you ask that question, if you answer that question with no, you can rest peacefully. But if you answer that question with a yes, you need to do two things. Number one, figure out how to unwind it or undo it. And number two, figure out how to never do it again. Since that day in November of 1984, I have asked myself that question every single night.
Wow.
I have never answered that question with a yes.
Well, that's great. That's a lot of self-reflection, but that's pretty intentional too.
Very intentional. And it becomes the foundation of really my leadership style, which is leading with integrity. Now, I'm not the only one in the world that does that, but it is something that was instilled with me or in me at a very early time in my career and has stuck with me and has never failed me.
Yeah, that's great. But like when you're in the heat of battle, you may not intentionally want to hurt somebody, or so I don't know about amazing that you always answered yes, but you've run organizations, had leadership positions, and like maybe you should have answered maybe sometimes, or it was always yes.
No, it was always no. It was always,
Always know that you didn't intentionally do, yeah.
I don't think I ever said, there have been a slight few occasions where I needed to clarify what I was saying or doing because people weren't interpreting it the way I was intending it to be interpreted. But I don't think I ever had to go to bed and answer with the answer of yes or even a maybe.
Like when you coach leaders, though, let's say you already have integrity. And so you're not really worried about integrity. You're not worried about, you have to worry about how you present yourself and how you're communicating both verbally and physically and all these things as leaders that sometimes you think about, sometimes you don't. But is it really about ethics or is it about, because if you're like, how do you answer that? Because, oh, I don't have an ethical, I have a lot of values. I don't have ethical problems. I don't need coaching for that.
True.
How do you answer that?
But the important thing is, if you lead with integrity, you will build teams that are trusting, that will follow you, and that will believe in you and the vision that you have for the team or organization. Absent integrity, you'll never gain that trust. And if once you lose that trust, you can't regain it back easily.
Yeah, totally agree. Now, how about like how has things changed with AI, analytics, data coming into some of the decision process and influencing maybe how you make decisions? Has it changed at all? Do you have a point of view there or?
One of the things that I strongly believe about AI is AI will really help us become more efficient. AI today does not have the ability to replace the human emotion component within a team, unless you get some type of rogue AI programmer to get it to hate everybody, but that's not likely. And so I don't see AI coming in and really, as a result of AI, organizations cutting half of their staff. That's not going to happen.
No.
Now, there's no way that's going to happen. But what it will do, it may impact some lives, but it will help us work more efficiently and also faster because it can help us get to the answers quicker.
And when you like work with some of these executives today, what do you think they're most unprepared when it comes to working and becoming more AI or more data driven?
I think they're afraid of what they're going to find out. When I talk to leaders and I say, look, you need to be able to grasp AI, but do it slowly so you can see the what it's doing. Don't make this decision to say, I'm all in on AI, and in 30 days, every department's going to have AI running some aspect of their business. I recommend go at it slowly. It's still a proving out process, and there's so many different AI tools out there, and some are better than others for different purposes. I'll give writing as an example. Now, my book that I wrote, I did not use AI to write the book. I did use AI to do some research because within my book, I do quote other leaders around the world that use the pillars that I use in their leadership style. The only other aspect I did with AI was I wanted to make sure that I wasn't unconsciously replicating somebody else's work. So I used AI to take my manuscript and compare it to anything it could find to see if there was anything close to what I was going to publish.
Yeah, that's good. And how do you balance like intuition with data driven judgment calls? Like, how do you give advice around that?
So typically what I do, so I'll give an example from a sales world. In our world, we use AI in a couple of places, a lot of which in prospecting and understanding our prospects' needs and wants through recording of the meeting sessions and having AI interpret the audio inflection in voices and what people are saying and whether or not it's sensing that they're being truthful or not or interested in not. but it still takes a human to be able to judge whether or not they accept that. So even though AI may say, hey, Jim, in your conversation with Dean, Dean was saying he was interested, but he's really not. And here's why. Here's the verbal cues that led me to that decision. And then I have to be the one who says, okay, I was present in that conversation. And that's not how Dean was responding, because he kept giving me thumbs up, kept smiling, even though his words may not have tracked along the same way. So there's still ambiguity in it, which still requires human interpretation.
You answer this question, but like, this is kind of like emotional intelligence that you're talking about. And do you see that changing as we get more agentic execution, more AI, more data and AI? Like, how do you think that's going to change over time, emotional intelligence?
I don't think the concept of emotional intelligence will change. I truly believe that what will happen is, if you even take the six pillars that I talk about, compassion and empathy, focus and stability and integrity, though they've been around for centuries. They haven't gone away, but they have evolved. Because as generations have evolved, there's nuances with regard to them. But to me, one of the biggest reasons I think I'm really pushing this integrity bandwagon is I really think in a lot of ways around the world, we have lost some of that. And integrity is not usually the thing that people are led by. And it's more personal motivation and personal self-interest. And I think that's damaging to everyone. And so that's why I'm really pushing that agenda more. And it's, believe it or not, it's really been resonating with people.
Yeah, we're at a unique point right now in history, just like one with the promise of AI and the real facts around improvement with AI. But the hype around AI is, for me, I just can't believe some decisions and expectations boards and Fortune 500 CEOs think they can do with the hype, that they think they can replace all of this, a certain function, or we can just put AI in practice and we're going to trust it in some of the decisions, or even let it be agentic. And I don't know, what kind of advice do you have? Like, you already gave some advice about that, about going slow, understanding AI, what's capable around that. But like, what kind of advice do you have for people to just get more grounded in clarity of what's possible and not with AI?
I really encourage them to just play with it. It's as simple as that. I'll use my wife as an example, because I know she won't listen to this podcast, but my wife is not the most computer savvy person in the world. And she was asking me a question one day, and it's not that I didn't want to answer her, but I said, why don't you look at ChatGPT and ask ChatGPT that very question and see what you get? And it was interesting because she read the response that she got. And I don't even remember what the question was, actually, but she read the response that she got and she was like, oh, that's a really interesting take. I didn't think about that. And that's all I remember from that conversation. I don't even remember what the subject was. But I said, I said to her, don't be afraid of AI. Just be wary of it, because it's not always right. And that's where the human aspect has to come in.
Yeah.
I just pictured the image of a fortune teller, right? It's almost like you're asking the fortune teller a question and the fortune teller is giving you the answer, and it may or may not be true or not. I don't know where that came from. So I apologize for that coming out of my brain, but
that's okay. So you're a big believer, which I am as well, in creating trust and getting teams to work. That's the cornerstone of high performing teams and creating that trust. But what mistakes do you see leaders make when they get excited about AI or analytics, and then something that's unintentionally damages that trust or culture or relationship on their teams?
I think the first thing is I think they have to buy into it, and they have to endorse it and encourage people to try it. That's number one. But number two, I think they have to also caution their people that you can't just take what AI spits out and produce it. It may or may, there are some things, when you come up with a new product idea for your company, you don't run out and just build it. You do some testing and some analysis and stuff like that in order to figure out if this is going to fit in the market. AI can help you get there and maybe more efficiently, but it doesn't eliminate the need to validate whether or not what you want to build is going to be sellable.
Yeah, and a lot of executives, at least a lot of the new headlines in the news, is people saying, look, we're either going to replace you with AI or we're going to replace you with someone that's really good at AI, which is a strong-armed point of view, which I'm sure you don't agree with. Like, what kind of advice do you have for getting people that are worried about AI and their jobs to like come along and have that change happen within themselves and in their company and their teams and workflow? Like, or advice for managers to bring the teams and the people along that are worried and skeptical about AI?
The one thing that I worry about is, especially in healthcare, is AI rapidly being deployed in a clinical environment. And it's interesting, I've followed a couple of hospital CEOs who were writing about AI, and not one of them talked about using it in a clinical capacity. They talked about using it in other administrative capacities within the organization. And I think that's the right area of focus. I don't know, doesn't mean that we can't get to where you put in the symptoms of something and AI tells you 27 things to rule out. It's not going to say, oh, Jim has, I'm going to make this tonsillectomy, or Jim has cancer of the whatever, just by looking at those symptoms, because a doctor has to go through a process flow of ruling things out before they ultimately decide, A, what is the problem and how are we going to then solve it? And it's a little bit more complicated when you're dealing with a human life. And I don't see the medical community adopting AI as quickly as industry may be, because it's got a different set of impact. I know if I went to my doctor's office and after speaking to my doctor, she or he pushes a button and the computer says, oh, Jim's here today because he's got such and such disease. I'm not going to believe that for a second, right? I'm going to say, where's the blood test that shows it? What do we have to do to rule out the other things that it could be? How do we know how accurate this is? Now, could we someday get there? Potentially, but I don't think we'll ever get totally there.
And but are you still a believer where the doctor can use it as a tool to explore problems, diagnosis, but still the human is still going to go through their thought process and analysis? And
I do. Yeah. I do see it being able to be used as a tool, but not as the decision maker.
Okay. And so do you think, like, how do you bring along those doctors or those health organizations to trust it, adopt it? A lot of managers struggle with these directives from coming above. Be more productive. How are we using AI? And you need to be thoughtful about it. But then you have the human elements also very challenging to get everyone to start doing it. Like, any advice to help managers bring their teams along to be open and explore and use and learn and use AI to benefit their company?
Absolutely. I'll give you a case in point. In my own situation, I went to our sales organization and I said, look, I want to help you be more efficient. So we're going to implement a couple of new tools. I'm not advertising or I'm not obligating you to use the tools, but I'm going to ask you to try them. So all I ask is to try them. And I introduced a tool that was going to allow it. The tool would record the conversation, phone or meeting. The tool would then give a summary of the meeting, in other words, the meeting notes, and the next steps that everyone agreed to and who that next step was assigned to, and even drafted the follow-up letter. And I said, all I want to do is try to make you a little bit more efficient, because I think if we can do this with AI, it'll free up 4 to 5 hours of administrative work after one meeting, just to figure out, okay, what did we commit to? What do we have to do later, et cetera? And so That simple test, originally there were a couple of, I'll be very honest, a couple of people said, I'm skeptical, I'm not going to be the first one to try it. But then people started sharing the notes of their meetings with others and said, you got to look at what this just produced. It was spot on with the meeting notes. It was spot on with the next steps. And it even made some other recommendations, but it also wrote my follow-up note for me. And all I had to do was tweak it.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
And so you make them a believer.
Yep. Yep. And then if you were to create like non-negotiable, I think you might have stated this, but like non-negotiable leadership habits around AI and data, like what would be like the 2 to 3 non-negotiable habits or practices that you'd build into a program like that?
The number one thing I would build into that program is a review process after you've used AI before you implement something with peers that you work with or who could be impacted by whatever was being recommended by AI. I think of it as an AI governance group, just like you have IT and data governance groups in companies today, because we have evolved. You didn't need data governance 30 years ago. We weren't getting, we had mainframe computers, everything else was manual. But today we have these compliance groups or data governance groups. And I think companies should employ an AI governance group so that they can have a uniform strategy and somebody who's responsible for managing the tools that are getting used. Because if you don't manage that, people are going to go see something on the internet, download it, not knowing whether it's reputable or not. And it could potentially do harm, but it could potentially do good. I'm not trying to say the sky is falling, but I think that governance layer has to exist.
Yeah, that's good. That's a really good answer. And how about developing future-ready talent? Like, how should leaders think about developing their people? So not just good at today's tools, but like this constant wave of innovation and AI that is coming and coming. Like, how should we think about developing talent?
I wish I was an HR professional and I knew all of the answers to every question. I don't really have a good question for that, other than that, if I think back to when in business, I got my first computer and how quickly that computer evolved with its capabilities, but more importantly, its speed in doing things. I still remember the first Mac that came out operated with cassette tapes. I'm dating myself now, but I probably shouldn't go in much further with that. But in our lifetime, we have really made some significant technological advances and have driven cost of computerization way down, including a storage of data compared to where it was even a decade ago. And I think to prepare people, they need to understand that this is going to be part of our business culture moving forward. It's not going to take away everybody's job. And there's only the CEO left that pushes 6 buttons and he's running a $1 billion corporation.
That is not going to happen.
Correct. Yeah. And it's funny because everybody, you ask the similar questions as others have asked, and I chuckle at it. And I'm like, I dislike the media stretching where things are going.
Not helping.
And back in college, I had a class. It's the one I remember the most. It was called Contemporary Moral Values. There was no textbook. Now, I grew up in New Jersey. I went to Seton Hall University, which is a Catholic university, and a priest taught this class, and there was no book. You had to bring in either the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, or the Washington Post to class.
Not the Daily News?
Not the Daily News. If called upon, you had to take an article, and you would have had to do this in advance, from the main section of the paper, meaning starting at the front page, and then wherever it followed afterwards, and be able to present to the class the religious and political background of the reporter and what were they trying to convince you to believe in. Now, remember, I graduated in college in 1984, 83. So this was before my senior year in college. There was no AI, there was no computers, there was no none of that. But it really made me look at what the media was doing. And in fact, when COVID hit, I actually stopped watching the news. I used to watch it start to finish. I don't. I'll tune in for sports and weather, and that's it.
Yeah. I've never heard of a class like that. That's really powerful to teach you about, like, the strategy behind how influential the media is and how intentional it can be. Like, it's, and unfortunately, ethics needs to be taught there. But you know what? It's not even ethics. They intentionally are doing that.
Correct.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I agree 100% with you. Yeah, it's a tough world we're in, but I like to be very positive. Like, there's amazing, great people out there. It's just unfortunate that we have this untruthful internet or broadcasters. But that's a whole other topic.
Now, we could talk for weeks on that alone.
Yeah, that's horrible, but it's good to that's a pretty cool course that you took. So looking ahead, what in the next 5 years, like, what surprises do you think most leaders will have about how AI changed their role or how they manage or how they lead the company or the teams?
I think depending upon the leader, I think some will be very disappointed in their own performance because they didn't adopt it soon enough or quick enough. And I think that's why I urge people not to be afraid of it. It's not a virus that's going to hurt you. It's something that could potentially help you. And I think that learning opportunity for a CEO, I think a CEO has to learn that first and see that and figure out, again, where it makes sense and where can it help and where to not try it, as an example.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a question here, but just reflecting on that course that you took, which is really interesting, it's people talk about trustworthy AI. And I think people really need to understand what that means. It means that the AI can be wrong and that there is bias built into the models, and not maybe intentionally or unintentionally, but like that human judgment is so much needed. And there's not really a question there, but just reflecting on unintended consequences of biasness and trustworthiness. That's a big factor in how you have to work with and manage these AIs, that you can't just trust them, but yet they're very valuable. And I don't know if you have anything to add to that or comment on that.
Other than the fact that there's software that's out there that does bias things too, even in healthcare. And I think we've read articles where people's approval for an authorization was made by a computer and not by a physician, and when reviewed by a physician was ultimately overturned or whatever, and where some organizations have been fined as a result of that. It happens in software. It could happen in AI as well.
Right? Yeah.
And so those biases, again, are what we have to make sure that we have a way to protect ourselves from doing damage from those biases.
Definitely. And so what question didn't I ask that maybe you wanted me to ask just to share with the readers or listeners?
The one question I get asked the most often is, why did you decide to write a book? And it's a very simple, it's a great question, because when I started the process, I realized very quickly why so many people quit that process and never finish it. It's not easy.
No.
It takes a lot of time. And you have to have very thick skin because editors want to change your words. But I thought it was important, now that I'm entering kind of my retirement years, I want to be able to give back to people the things that made me successful. And that's why I wrote the book, plain and simple. It's a quick read. It's less than 200 pages. It's to the point. It's got a lot of 5-star ratings out there on Amazon and Goodreads. And I think it's timely. And that's one thing that comes out in many of the reviews is, this is timely. We need this today. We needed it yesterday. We don't have it. We have it today. But it's my opportunity now, as I retire, to give back and help coach people and help them become the leaders that they want to be or the type of leader that others will follow.
And the name of the book is?
The Six Pillars of Effective Leadership, A Roadmap to Success.
Great, great. And that kind of segues into if people want to get in touch with you and continue on understanding maybe more of your coaching, how can they do that?
The best way to do that is to go to my website, which if you see my name on the screen, is just www.jimcarlo, just don't put a space between Jim and Carlo, and .com. Or just Google Jim Carlo, and I'm sure the book or I will possibly come up.
Yeah, I totally subscribe to your thought process, and I couldn't agree more. It's about leading with integrity, and then that creates trust on the team, and then you can handle all the problems that the world and business throws at you. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your point of view, Jim. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me. I'd love to talk to you again sometime.
Excellent. Thank you. Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen, and if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.